anybody who does not already know, which would surprise me very much, because let's face it, you're here for the authors, not for me. This is Sarah Rockin' the Kozloff. I apologize, don't let me do that again. She is a university professor, or at least, are you retired now?
I am retired.
You are retired now. She was a university professor, got her start in film production, as I remember, got your degree from Dartmouth, later went on and got a PhD from some little-known college named Stanford University, was the professor at Vassar College, specializing in film history. And then once upon a time, realized way back in 2012 as a senior seminar, or teaching a senior seminar on American women's directors, realized that films like Lord of the Rings could not pass. And I apologize for this. I've seen it a million times. I looked it up. It had a pronunciation key that said Bechdel. And if you click the listen to it, it said Bechdel. So I still don't know how to pronounce it. Test.
Bechdel.
Bechdel. So the Bechdel was right. The little computer voice was wrong. Ha, computers, that'll teach them. So you decided to, you know, just sit down and write your own epic novel. By the way, I think you did a very good job. And then I'm going to, a lot of these stuff I know you've answered before. I know some of the answers, but I'm going to ask for people who haven't met you. I'm going to start off with the fact that you decided that, you know, four books is, you know, one thing, but four books in 4 months would be much more impressive. Usually that's only, you know, things that only like James Patterson and his posse of side authors could handle. But you did it all by yourself, 4 books in 4 months. So tell the people what was behind that crazy idea.
Well, of course, it actually took me years to write the four books. And for
them, of course.
Copy edited and edited and all those sorts of things. But it was my editor, Jen Gunnels at Tor. She came up with the idea of rapid publication, because when the books came out in 2000, people were still very hurt and raw about Thrones. And the idea that authors would lead you so far on a series and then drop you. Gotcha. So she said, Sarah, you have these finished. We have them all. Let's allow people to binge read. So January, Queen in Hiding. February, Queen of Raiders. March, The Broken Queen. And April, This Ruling Queen. And in April, the pandemic hit.
So it was actually probably pretty good timing. I mean, if anybody was going to be sitting around needing something to binge read, April of 2020 was it.
I did have people write to me and say, thank you.
Exactly.
You sort of helped me through the pandemic. For me, it was a heartbreak, though, because I was on a book tour. The sort of resounding chords of the symphony were at the end, the conventions and the big events. They were all at the end.
And they all got canceled. Which is part of the reason, like, I tell people I do this is because I used to work at a bookstore and I missed those author events like crazy. So this is kind of what I do to try to bring them back. One thing I want to point out, and I've got them all here. Hopefully I don't drop them on my head again. And you can't quite tell because I was working at a bookstore. So this first one is an arc. But if I had the actual first book, I love it when you get a little picture on the spines, put them all together. You don't have to look at the numbers. You just put the picture together and you know you've got the books in the right order. Yes, exactly. Mine just says Indie Next Nomination, due 11/4/19. I do apologize. I didn't get that Indie nomination in time.
What bookstore were you working at?
The Bookworm in Omaha, here in Nebraska.
Okay.
Technically, I think I still work there. I didn't quit and they didn't fire me. I just got another job and just kind of quit getting put on the schedule. But, you know, hey, they also do the Berkshire event every year. So if they ever need help, they know I'm happy to jump in. So, but absolutely, like I said, absolutely loved this series. I read the first one. Obviously, that was the arc. Liked it so much that my daughter got me the other three. So I had the entire set. Downside is I have not, I know it's been 3 years. I haven't quite finished. I'm about halfway through book three. One, It's been 3 years. I had to start back over when I realized I was going to do this with you. So I started over. I reread book one. I reread book two. We haven't had this scheduled that long, so they're not super big, long reads. It's not the fact that, you know, how big it is. It took me 3 years. It's just the fact that when I got these two, I was also heading up, along with one of my coworkers, the sci-fi fantasy book club at work. And so I always had some designated reading I had to do too, so just didn't get back to it. But except halfway book three, it's been out for 3 years. I'm not going to worry about spoilers. If we spoil something, it's 3 years old, you know, can't help that. Well, a couple other things I wanted to bring up though, before we get into these books specifically, I want to talk a little bit about your background. I know you started with film production. A lot of times what I like to ask somebody, especially if I know their past history, either jobs or background, is there anything about that that you think really helped your writing process, or at least in this novels?
Yeah, I mean, so much. In film production, one of the things that was eye-opening for me was learning the importance of sound. And anyone who started book one will know that in the castle, there are all these little fountains and water treatments. And so often I add the sound of the water dripping.
Ah, gotcha.
Drip, drip. And so, you know, I mean, and I think that adds a sort of three-dimensionality and reality to the space.
It does.
More than my background in film production, my background in film history imbues the whole series. I think of Queen of Raiders as a Western, and I certainly had Westerns in mind when I was writing it, and I was thinking also about Kurosawa's The Seven Samurai. And so when Phelan chooses the warriors to go with him in Oromandu, that's a straight copy of a scene in The Seven Samurai where they choose the seven that are going to go try and save a village.
And one of the things I liked about your writing, and I know that you have admitted that you've quote unquote copied a lot of at least ideas, but what author hasn't? I think even the ones who think they don't, no, you've read something, it's sparked something. Yeah. It's the fact that, for instance, I saw an interview where you talked about the fact that you wrote that as a Western. And I just thought to myself, dang, she's right. That was a Western. Didn't dawn on me at all. I see the connection with the Seven Samurai. Didn't dawn on me at all. At no part in my writing did I think, like, unfortunately, somebody has ruined the Shannara books for me, because they talked about how much it's just a copy of Lord of the Rings, and now I can't unsee it. But yours, even the ones after I know that you kind of like hinted towards this, hinted towards that, while reading your books, I never thought, like, oh, I've read this before. Oh, that's just so-and-so. You made it yours.
It shouldn't be, since I'm drawing on different sources than typical fantasy authors would. I mean, yes, of course, there's a lot of Lord of the Rings, but I'm not drawing on Rothfuss or Jordan or anything. I'm drawing on Hitchcock and Kurosawa and Nicholas Ray. So these different sources, whether you catch them or not, I hope they bring a certain kind of richness into the novel.
Yeah, you talk about Rothfuss. He's the one I always think about, because don't get me wrong, I know he's never going to be on the program because I always say this. I love Patrick Rothfuss. I would really love to see book three at some point. So that's kind of like, you know, kind of the fun that yours was like four out and you could binge it. Rothfuss, the 10th anniversary of book one has long since passed, and we still don't have book three. He's not going to return any of my calls.
I read one and two, and I don't remember them well enough to read book three whenever it comes out.
I can remember, at this point in time, I can remember maybe four scenes in that series. It's just been too long.
I just got an email today from a lovely fan who said that her library highlighted the series, and she didn't have anything to do this week. And she's read the first three, and she's almost done with book four. The fact that it's finishable, you know?
It is. I finished book two in about 3 or 4 days when I reread it. And that is taking into account that I have a full-time job. I'm not retired. Just sitting in the around in the afternoon, couple, you know, no later than 8 or 9 at night, because at my age, you have to go to bed at 8 or 9 at night. Yeah. And it's, if I'd had just time to sit down, yeah, this series is finishable in a week or two if somebody's got the free time. One of the things I love too about it, and I'll get to this, it's out of order, but thinking about the fact that you could actually read this is the fact that I love what you've done with the fantasy names. First of all, they are fantasy names. Second of all, they are pronounceable. I've just gone through a lot of books, even if I love the writing, where they have like 3 or 4 characters whose names are so similar that I'm sitting around going, which one was that again? Or you just give them a new name in their head because you cannot pronounce this. The other thing that I love that you did, because, and I don't, like I said, not a spoiler at this point, the Princella's name changes by necessity as she goes through. She's in hiding, so every time she goes somewhere new, you're going to learn this early on, it's no biggie, but she picks a new name. However, you themed that name. So whenever I see her, sometimes I'm like, wait, oh, no, that's the Princella. It doesn't, I don't have to sit there and think, oh, she changed from John to Henry to Michael. Obviously, I'm using guys' names here, but that's what came to mind first. But she's not just picking random names. It all has a theme. By the way, halfway through book three, after getting rescued off the boat, I love the name you gave her. I'm going to let people discover that on their own. It was so apropos. I saw exactly what you did there, but I loved it. Fits the theme and also fits everything that's happened to her. So love that part.
Well, yep. Some of the things I approach as a reader, I don't like names I can't remember or names I can't pronounce. I mean, in fact, two friends of the main character have names starting with H and they're both 4 syllables. I'm never going to keep it straight. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to keep them straight. You have to help the reader. You have to make their names different enough.
And you made them different enough, like I said, fantasy without going crazy. I can tell you exactly who Hickath is. It's not a normal name. It's not like Bob or Jim.
Right.
But it's also not so crazy that I'm like, I don't remember who this character is to save my soul. Right. The other thing I love that you did with the, oh my word, I can't remember, the agents. Mm-hmm. All of their names, they're very simple. They say exactly what they do. But I love the whole, is it the moot? Am I remembering that correctly? The fact that a lot of these agents had issues when they came. They weren't, you know, one was deaf, one was blind. In the moot, when they're gathering together, all of those things go away. The blind guy can see, the deaf man can hear. But it's also, I love the fact that being an agent of these spirits or gods, however you want to word it, they didn't always take them all away. In real life, the deaf guy's still deaf in his everyday life. Right. Yeah, they're following these people because of their loyalty to the spirit, not always because, you know, follow me and I'll heal all your wounds and I'll give you fantastical powers.
They don't have much power. They have very little power. And in fact, the spirits, I mean, we know the spirits are there, but they mess with the world very rarely. Mm-hmm. Only at key moments. And I wrote a blog post once about how I like my magic spare.
Yes, exactly.
I don't like it slathered on like too much frosting. In book four, you learn that it takes 3 agents to persuade any other god. So it's kind of interesting.
I am going to get there. I'm too hooked now. Like I said, I'm halfway through book three. I cheated a little bit. I'd already owned book three, but I also grabbed the audiobook so I could try to get through it a little faster. Which I also think is nice too, because sometimes you get, oh crap, I forgot her name now. I don't have my phone in front of me, but I love the lady who, at least on book three, she was the reader for that.
Yeah, no, she does them all.
She does them all, okay.
And I haven't listened to them because I would want to change the sentences. You know, you're never really done. You always.
Well, yeah, and I swear that no matter how good they are, they're going to have at least one character where you're like, well, that's not what it sounded like in my head.
But I've heard that she's terrific, and people do love the audiobooks. But you miss the map, and you miss the character names, the appendix
with
the
yes, characters. Yep. Yeah, the one downside of audiobooks is also, too, is it's a lot harder to, like, wait a second and flip back.
Right.
If I've got a physical book, I'm like, wait, what was it? No, that was on the left side, about halfway down. Yeah, e-books and audiobooks, I just lose that ability.
You're supposed to be able to do that in Kindle, and I haven't figured it out.
Well, I know you can flip it back, but because Kindle, you're always on a page, I can't think left side, right side, any of that. It just makes it harder for me to remember.
Whatever, yeah.
Every Kindle page looks the same. That's all there is to it. Plus, I know this is just a me thing. When I see something wrong in a digital book, an ebook, a Kindle, I'm thinking, okay, there's a typo. I should be able to fix it. If a typo sneaks through in a physical book, I'm like, eh, nothing you can do about it. Ebook, I'm like, no, where's my delete button? I want to fix this now. But I said, absolutely love the way you handle it. Like I said, I think the word I always thought of is the spirits seem to give their agents maybe what you would like to call insight sometime to time. But it's completely up to the agents to figure out, A, what that means, and B, how to fix it.
Exactly.
Usually they're not putting their hands in and muddying the waters too much.
That's right.
One thing I did think of, actually, no, let me get, while we're talking about the agents, I want to get to this. Normally, this is the type of question you would probably ask at the end, but I think it fits here. All of you guys, the agents, the magi, the princesses, the queens, had different talents. I'm sure you went through an entire list. You know, we've got the enchanter, the swimmer, the Griffin. Oh, by the way, I used the name Griftkin. If I had remembered Grifling when I created that, I probably would have used that instead. I love that term. But I'm sure you came up with at least one or maybe more where you're like, okay, I love this, but I don't really have a place to put it. What is there a talent that you thought of that did not make the cut?
I'm not sure whether I mention her but I wanted a queen who could sing, and when she sang, the melody would be specific to her listener,
mm-hmm.
and would sort of give the listener back a sense of themselves, a kind of healing sense of, so her singing was like a balm, a
gotcha.
Balm. And I don't think that's any.
I don't. To the first 2.5 books, I don't think it's in there at least anyhow. But so that's kind of cool. But I mean, I get it too. I'm sure there's always, you're trying to fit a story and then you edit a story. There's always got to be a piece that you thought of as like, I love this, but there's no good place to put it.
Right.
The other thing that I loved with your whole talent scheme too is like, for instance, in Where the queens have the power. In Lothariod, pretty much everybody has a hint of their power. In Oromando, yes, sorry, I was thinking of the people. Yeah. Only the Magi have the power. So I like the fact that, you know, each one of those, they share their powers, but they don't necessarily, all the spirits don't necessarily share them equally, yeah. Which I really think helped differentiate.
Different governments, different magic systems. I had a funny, not really fight, but words with Tor. At one point, they were going to call it the Nine Kingdoms.
Uh-huh.
And I said, you can't call it the Nine Kingdoms because it's a queendoms. And so that's how it became the Nine Realms.
Well, and you wrote it because of the Bechdel test. So I don't think they can call it kingdoms. It's like, you're missing my point.
You're missing my point here.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So realms worked fine, except there's some overlap, I think, with Norse mythology, which wasn't on my mind at all. So, I mean, in Norse mythology, there's nine.
The Earths, the Mid-Earth, and the Nine Realms. Is it the Nine Realms? The Nine Realms is sure. It's nine. I know what you're saying, but I can't think of the word for it. the Midgard and all, you know, all the stuff that, you know, Marvel has taught us.
Right.
More than our high school careers. So one of the things too that I thought of, and I loved it in years, like I said, I'm only through about 2.5 books, is I feel like you borrowed the idea of the Fellowship, but it's not one of those things where they're all thrown together in book one and they all go on this big quest. No, people are doing this, people are doing that. And as you go through them, all these characters start to kind of come together and crossing paths. So instead of having this whole thing where we've got to put this group together to go out because nobody can do it on their own, it's like, no, we've got all these people trying to do it and they kind of realize they can't all do it on their own. It's a much more slower, and I think to me, it's a much more satisfying version of that story.
I think there's that this really comes to fruition in the last book, where all the threads come together. You know, people, I've kept them apart for 3 books. And then they come together. And it's just such a satisfying feeling when finally, you know, Cerulea drops all of her aliases and everybody knows what happened.
By the way, I also love it too when an author writes something in such a way that you see something coming, but you still love it. Like right now in book 3, I'm at the part where Mikkel has just sent off Cerulea to go get healed. And things are starting to click for him. And he's like, which dagger did you send?
Right.
And I know exactly what he's putting together.
Right.
I can see it coming, but I still love it. It's a perfect story. There are so many of those like near misses in there. It's like, like you said, the thing, like if you'd been here a half hour earlier, you would have made the ship. And the fact that like things are just starting to dawn on people, just a hair too slow. I think it keeps it moving. I will be honest. I would first, when I got to the part where Cerulea, let's say the point between where she goes in the moat and the point that she ends up and the thing, I almost thought to myself, I almost don't know if I like this story because of the fact that this was supposed to happen, but, you know, intervention. But the more I'm reading it and the more things are placing together, it's like, no, I take it back. Now that I've gotten past that brief moment of at the whole moot point when Lothrad. Yes. But the whole, you know, it kind of intervened. And I thought, well, that's kind of a... And then I got into it. I was like, no. He only intervened a little bit. This was no miraculous save. He just, you know, helped her maybe get a little out of danger a little faster than she would have. There's no magic. Oh, we're going to bring her back to life or any weird stuff like that. So like I said, everything so far in this series, I have absolutely loved. Just for anybody who's watching or if you see this later, one of the reasons I've got Sarah on here, other than the fact that I love her books, is the fact that my daughter also was talking to me the other day about the 9 realms. And by the other day, my wife will tell you that's anything between this morning and 5 years ago. I have no sense of time. But she had mentioned the 9 realms. It had been so long since I read them, I forgot that was the series name. I'm like, 9 realms? She's like, you're the one that told me to read them. And I'm like, oh, yeah. It's like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe I haven't asked her to be on yet. Just because of the fact, again, so many books. I have so many books. It's not even funny. It's kind of a funny that I have all 4 of your books because the older I get, the more I realize I love physical books, but my back does not like moving them. doing a lot more e-books and audiobooks than I used to. Yeah. But, you know, the fact that she brought it up, she loves the books. And, you know, obviously 2 totally different generations there. She's in her early mid-20s. I'm a little older than that. But both of us, like I said, have loved the series, loved the story that's going on. As much as she starts out, the Princella starts out as a young person, I never felt like this was... And then don't get me wrong, I love some YA authors. Neil Schusterman, for instance, even though he's YA, a lot of times I love his books. I never felt like this was a YA talking down. This was very much a young adult to adult book. Anybody in that area could read this book and love it. It's not all the teen angst and everything that you sometimes see.
I'm very tired of snarky first person teenage narrators.
Yes.
And we really don't have that. We don't have that voice, and it would be wrong because this is supposed to be much higher fantasy than that.
Right.
But I wrote it. If I wanted to use a sophisticated word, I used it. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to put in a scene of people peeing, I did it. I mean, I did not want to feel as if I was censoring myself in any way. And so I wrote it for adults, but there's nothing in there that would harm teenagers.
No, no. Except I probably wouldn't have suggested to my daughter if I thought there was, because obviously 3 years ago, she's still pretty young. It's hard not to think of them as kids. If she's watching, I apologize. I know, but yeah. Sometimes they're always, you know, always your child. But anyhow, what was the other? Oh, the fact too that you also created the characters in such a way that I think that would allow you to do that. For instance, the Princella, she's been, even though we start out very early, what was she, 8, I think, when it first started out? We start out with her very young, but she's also a Princella. She has been studying with the best tutors. When she goes into hiding, she kind of has to hide how smart she is. But that also allows you to give her a vocabulary that maybe not every eight-year-old would have. Not that they're saying there's not some really intelligent 8-year-olds out there.
Right.
But I think in a different subject, for instance, if Persia, if you wrote Persia talking like the Princella, it wouldn't have fit. But by having that character, I always think that the best teacher for children in the English language is reading.
Yeah.
And you don't talk down to them, and they'll figure out what you meant. Most of us figure out words in context. We don't have a rote memorization of the entire dictionary, which is why sometimes we have them wrong, too.
But then, Priscilla, you know, what I strived to accomplish was that Priscilla certainly has her flaws. Mm-hmm. I mean, she doesn't like manual labor. She tries to get away from it. She's a little bit lazy. She will tell lies. She's a little proud,
mm-hmm.
or a little proud. But then I also did that with the villains.
Right.
And I think that was, to me, the most important sort of subversion I made of the genre. Because in so many fantasy novels, the villains are Sauron. And they're just bad. They're mm-hmm. just personified, right?
Yep. But
I wanted you to see that the Oros were attacking because they were starving, because they had no other choice.
And and they had the narrative from the top, you know, the whole, it's not the original sin, the original whatever it was.
The story that the witches had poisoned their grain. Yes.
Right.
So it was disinformation and starvation led to invasion, not that they were the epitome of bad people. And so I think all of the villains,
mm-hmm.
I tried to give them, I mean, Matwick has a terrible childhood, a
yes.
brutal, neglected childhood. He's a social climber and he's a bit of a sociopath, but you can sort of see why he would be.
Well, also one of the things that, and again, this is, I think, is one of the things that helps set apart Matwick from some of the other villains, the way you wrote him, is Matwick is constantly convincing himself that he's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Even when he's only doing it for himself, he's still convincing himself.
He tells himself the stories.
Yep.
Make him feel, when he's trying to blackmail Nana into giving up the secrets, mm-hmm. you should almost be persuaded by him. You should feel that he believes it. He believes that he would be the mm-hmm. best regent.
He's smarter than everybody else.
And he wants good things for the country. So, you know, yeah, he does persuade himself.
One other thing I thought that you did well, I'm not just trying to blow smoke at you, but one of the things that stuck out for me, and I won't say the book because I don't want to, I pick on Patrick Rothfuss and James Patterson, but come on now. But I never want to throw an author under the bus, but I did read a book one time, and I was reading it for the book club, and A, nobody liked it. We had males and females, so it wasn't just a guy thing. But it felt like this person didn't know if they were ever going to write another book and wanted to put every social issue in it, even just to get it said. Right. And some that are like just mentioned and never mentioned again. I'm like, what was the point of that? There's a couple of things that you cover. Obviously, water. Why am I blanking on the word? Pollution. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Blanked on pollution. Water pollution, obviously, that's a backstory. The fact that, you know, the queendom and females as powerful people was a backstory. None of these felt forced. None of these felt like, well, I'm just going to write a book where women are in charge. None of these felt like, well, I'm going to write a book saying how bad water pollution is. No, these were background plots to your story. Never came across as preachy, although, you know, obviously it's like, yeah, maybe we should watch what we put in our water supply. But I love the fact that I feel like people are going to read your book and they're going to be able to learn about those topics and think about those topics without, oh, they're talking about such and such, I don't want to hear it. Yeah. Which I think we do an awful lot of time. So I love the fact that you talked on very important subjects, but did not come across from like, well, I'm going to tell you why you're wrong. Like, no, this is my story. This is how it happens. And, you know, if you learn something, that's just a bonus.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these are water. I mean, we're going to end up in wars over water in mm-hmm. a few decades. And I worry about it at night. And so it was just sort of easy to, with that background.
Yeah. We got a planet that's, you know, over 67-70% water, and most of it's not drinkable. So
right.
I do have a question for you. Don't take this where you think it's going to go.
Okay.
The Nine Realms obviously is a complete setting story. Mm-hmm. Do you see any time in your future, because I believe the Nine Realms has left itself open, not necessarily for a continuation of Werendal's story, mm-hmm. but there's so many other characters, you know, that could have a story or a backstory, like, you know, the Enchanter. I can't remember. The Queen's name sometimes were a little too close for me to remember who was who.
Yeah.
But you're only focusing on the two current ones, so it wasn't a big deal. But like the Enchanter or some of the, or even like I said, that the original, I know you used a different word for it. You didn't say sin. The original incident, whatever, where the queen had kicked out the Oros because they were worshiping.
They had polluted the water.
Right. So I know that was, again, one of those, like, you know, Hatfield and McCoy things. It's like, we're fighting over something. Nobody remembers who started it. But it definitely leaves itself open to that type of story where if you wanted to, no promises, I'm not going to put you on the spot. But have you ever thought about, I could see myself writing a different story in the Nine Realms at some point?
Sure. Yeah, I think I would not. I mean, there's various stories. Often I wonder, what happens to Gunnet?
Mm-hmm.
Still a little boy, right?
Right.
But he's already on the way somewhere. He's got these magic talismans. And, you know, the relationships with Rotherod and Lotharod and... No, I could see coming back.
Okay. Now looking for a timetable. Okay. Just sort it out there that I would buy the book. That's all I'm saying.
On sale.
Well, you know, I have a feeling you'd get more than that. I couldn't find any numbers on it, but if I remember correctly, this was not a bad little seller when it came out.
No, so. it's mid-list.
Especially as this was your debut novel. The book one, was it not?
This was my debut in creative writing.
Right.
I had never written a short story.
Yeah, didn't you have a book on like film or something too? Or
I wrote scholarship. I wrote 5 books of film history and film scholarship. So
right.
I know the dedication that it takes to get your seat in the chair in front of the computer. I can do that.
Right.
But I thought that analyzing and researching were very different from imagining and creating.
Mm-hmm.
And when I sat down, the scenes just materialized.
Yeah, I challenge anybody, if anybody sees this later, if you have not read these books, read the books. I challenge you to be disappointed. I don't think you can do it. Unless you just hate fantasy novels. I mean, I suppose there's got to be somebody out there. I don't like the name. I don't like the name Cressa. I knew a Cressa was in the high school. She was horrible.
Oh,
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I know. Right. Yeah, it's done well. I'm happy with it. I do, to some extent, feel like the book didn't get quite the chance it could have because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
But that's true of everybody who's published in 2020, 21, and 22.
Right. But again, as a debut author, novelist, I should say, as a debut novelist, that traction was probably more important for you and others like you who never got that chance, as to where I don't feel like she'll throw them under the bus, but somebody like Shauna McGuire had a track record of books. 2020 hit. The Shauna McGuire fans are still going to buy Shauna McGuire.
Or Naomi Novik. I mean,
right.
Right? I mean, it doesn't matter. She's got so much momentum. But if you were a debut, the pandemic was hard.
Well, that's one of the other reasons, like I said, I wanted you on here. I have yet to have an author on here that I had, I just want to get an author on. It's like always someday I've read, always someday I've enjoyed. I want people to find your book. I know that you can still go out in there and buy this. And I know, for instance, it's on Audible. It's on Libro.fm. If you don't like Amazon, I get that. It's on Libro.fm as well. So your book is still attainable. It's out there. I would love to see more people get into it. Like I said, I think if you read book one, there's no way you're not getting all 4 books. Even if it takes you 3 years to read them, you're getting all 4 books. That's all there is to it.
Okay.
Don't look like there's any questions going on in the chat. I will let you know, and I'll let the audience know too, if anybody's on there and they're just being quiet, which happens sometimes. There's nothing wrong with lurkers. Personal information, that sounds horrible. All of your links, all of your websites, sarahkozloff.com, your Instagram, I believe you're on Post, and your Twitter. I'll have links to all of those when this goes up on YouTube. I put it on YouTube afterwards, so people who didn't get to see it live still can enjoy it. And a couple of questions I do ask everybody. One, shout out to your favorite bookstore. Or any bookstore, any brick and mortar store, maybe the one that gave you, one you normally shop at, or one that maybe gave you your start on book signings, or?
Well, Oblong Books in Rhinebeck.
Okay.
Was where I had my first event.
Nice.
And sent the autograph. But then I had a second opening at the Strand in New York. And that was very exciting to be at the Strand. I also like, in between writing these books, publishing these books, I've moved from the East Coast to Colorado.
Oh, okay.
And I was in the local Barnes & Noble, and I saw my books on the shelf. They had a very full fantasy selection. I said, would you like me to sign them? And they said, yes. And they were really nice to me. So Barnes & Noble in Denver West is
nice. I will link all of those together. I'll put those on as well. Normally, I shout out to the Bookworm in Omaha. I'm not going to do that today because they already know that I love them. Sorry about this. The computer is going to make a noise for a second because it has completely dropped my mind. Trying to remember. I think I want to say it's the Literati Bookstore. going to give a shout out to, yep, Literati Bookstore, because a couple of months ago, or maybe it was last month, like I said, I have no sense of time whatsoever. They hosted the V.E. Schwab event in Ann Arbor, which my daughter and I went to. So shout out to them. Appreciate them hosting that. I do love the fact that we are starting to get some author events, physical author events going on again. But I also get, you know, some people, the pandemic's not over. It's probably, we're going to, I feel like we're at the point where we're going to learn to live with it like we do the flu. You get a shot, you just know that it's there. And if you don't have any sort of deficiency, immune deficiency, you just have to watch yourself that much closer.
And although I love presence, I love mm-hmm. being with people, the fact is that the pandemic opened up all of these kind of virtual interviews that were not as important before and became very important during the pandemic. And all of the publicists and all of the presses had to switch over to virtual. And it's a good thing, because now you can have recorded or go mm-hmm. to your local store.
Again, and the other thing I said I love about this is the fact that, for instance, hopping on something like this, you don't have to travel halfway across the country to do this. Although technically I'm in Nebraska, you're in Colorado, we're not that far apart. But again, something like YouTube, somebody might discover this later who had missed it and would have never got to hear you speak if they had missed a live event. And I know, like, a lot of authors too, a lot of authors are introverts. And I don't mean that, like, you know, condescending. It's the fact that it's the nature of the game. Most of them, before they start writing books, they're like, oh, I got to do marketing and meet and greets and all this stuff. Stephen King, obviously, huge one. I think he's done one event, maybe. I mean, one series of events in the, like, last decade or so, because he doesn't like going out into big crowds. That's just not his thing. And I have no problem with that. People have different levels of confidence. I obviously can talk to somebody I've never met before. It's just, you know, a lot of authors have forced themselves to become that, which I appreciate for stuff like this.
Well, I was a teacher. I mean, mm-hmm. I love the rapport that you can create with an audience.
Yes.
It's one of the most fulfilling, you know. And so, you know, I hope with future books to be able to get out there again.
Yeah, I mean, some people crave off the feedback going back and forth. Yeah. I usually have a few listed questions, and most of the time I just chat about whatever you said that brings up a question that I hadn't thought of, and we just move on. Two more quick questions, then we've gone over the books. One, is there anything, you're obviously known as an author, you're a professor, is there anything that you wish people knew about you that they don't? For instance, you have a black belt in ninjutsu or something, and nobody ever wants to talk about it.
Well, if I always move conversations around to my new passion in life, which is dog agility competitions.
I see your furry friend behind you briefly earlier.
Oh, yeah, she's there. She's also all over my website. I have an Australian Shepherd, and we're learning agility, and it is one of the funnest things I've ever done in my life. It's the hour that we're there, it's all flow. It's all in the moment, in the present. It's just great.
Gotcha. And the other one is kind of like that, but you know what? You're retired as a professor now. Obviously, we know you love gardening. I especially love the scenes with Gardner, and there I could tell your love coming through. But what do you like to, obviously, and you got the agility training, is there any other big stuff going on in your life right now that you just enjoy spending any free moment you have to do?
Hiking? I mean, I'm at the Rockies. I'm home in the Rockies.
Actually, you and my wife are going to get along, and I'll just be sitting at the bottom out of breath. Got it. Okay, that'll be perfect.
It's at our age, but the Rockies are gorgeous. If you follow me yes. on Instagram, you'll see lots of pictures of my husband, the dog, and the Rockies.
Well, it's a good place to be if you do like the hiking. I have been through there a couple times. I have tried to avoid hiking them, although my wife still drags me along once in a while. I remember one time in Alaska, I looked at her and thought to myself, as we're going up this mountain, I was like, aren't the clouds supposed to be above us? Because we were literally above cloud level looking down on it. Like, I am old, fat, and out of shape. I think you're trying to kill me. But I survived, obviously. So anyhow, like I said, nothing else big and exciting. Like I said, I did want to talk to you about this book series because, again, absolutely loved it. I am going to finish it. In fact, I'm going to finish up book three probably this week. I am going to get all of this up on YouTube maybe tomorrow. I guarantee nothing. My current job, I'm just so busy all the time. And I also do a lot of programming and editing and stuff like that. And sometimes I'm like, I got to quit looking at a screen for 5 minutes.
You do these interviews. I mean, you don't have to.
But I thoroughly enjoy it. And I didn't used to do quite so much video stuff as I used to. Wow, that was not English. I didn't used to do as much video editing as I do now, but like I said, I will clean this up mainly to get rid of all of the uhs that I just know from history I have said during the course of this interview. Get a few little snippets out there so people can, you know, see short and quick, because let's face it, for some people, we're looking at about 48 minutes now, is going to be a too long didn't read. So we'll get some of the highlights out there, get them out on YouTube. YouTube Shorts has become a great thing for that. And hopefully somebody's going to discover your books out of this, because I really think more people should read them. As I told you, I know I'm repeating myself. Not only was it a great story, but there's a lot of important stuff in there that, again, I didn't feel came across as preachy. It came across as, this is just the story, this is what happened to them. And, you know, I'm hoping maybe some people will take some things a little more serious than others. And that's it. I don't see any questions, so I'm probably going to wrap it up. Although, to be fair, my chat thing has also been spinning for like this whole time. So if anybody was watching and asked a question, I sincerely apologize. If anybody had in there and I could see it later, I will try to see if I can get them an answer. But thank you for your time.
It was nice to talk to you. Nice to meet you, Ed.
You too. Appreciate it. And like I said, everybody check out sarahkozloff.com if you want to catch up with she's doing lately, but it sounds more like you'll have more fun on her Instagram.
Right. Okay. Bye.
Thank you, ma'am.